And welcome back to the Odd Man Rush, our NHL podcast here at CBSSports.com. This is Greg Simaluka, and once again, I'm joined by Aaron Brown and Wes Goldstein. Aaron, Wes, hello.
How you doing?
Hey.
Very good, very good. All right, today we're going to be continuing our preview section of podcasts, and we're doing it on not the Central, but the Northwest Division.
We got that right.
Yes, we got that right, our little pre-podcast show. One of us here did not seem to get that right and wanted to redo the Central Division. No naming names, anybody. All right, so as we did with the other divisions, let's do a little 2008 versus 2009 overview of the Northwest Division. We have Calgary, Colorado, Edmonton, Minnesota, and Vancouver in this division. So from last year to this year, what do you guys see as the big changes?
Well, you have to look at the changes that were made by most teams in terms of their suits. You have four teams with new coaches, two teams with new general managers, and really dynamics have changed in that division quite a bit, because it used to be arguably the most competitive division in hockey, where everybody seemed to have a shot at the playoffs until the last weekend. Now, really, you have two teams that are playoff-worthy in Vancouver and Calgary, and the rest of them struggling to stay around the bubble. Maybe Colorado isn't even that good anymore, but I think that's what's changed a great deal in the Northwest Division.
Sure.
Yeah, it seems like it has become a division in the midst of rebuilding for a couple teams, specifically Minnesota, Edmonton, and Colorado. And, with the new coaches behind the bench, it's going to be very interesting to see what develops with some of those teams. I think with Calgary's coaching change, not so much. We know what they're aiming for, and we know what's in place there. But Minnesota, you have a team that's been very defensive for pretty much its entire existence.
Sure.
And now what are we going to see out of them? And
that's a story that I'm really, really curious about, is because it's, the first major change in the organization's philosophy and from a playing style perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's going to be very interesting to see what we get out of them, because it could be completely and totally different. I mean, usually when you played Minnesota, you knew what you were getting, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're getting the New Jersey Devils light, to a certain degree, because they didn't have some of the horses that New Jersey did to carry out that system, but it certainly worked quasi well for Minnesota the time that they had it. So it's definitely that's one of the storylines that I want us to kind of keep an eye on, and I want to revisit a few shows down the line once the season's underway, a month or two, to kind of see, let's determine what kind of style are they playing, and B, how successful are they at it.
Well, I think when you talk about New Jersey Light, obviously when you had Jacques Lemaire coaching the team from day one, you had the system of the guy who basically invented the trap and perfected it, for better or for worse. But I think it's going to be interesting, because Chuck Fletcher, the new GM, and Todd Richards, the coach he hired, have kind of promised that you're going to see a much more aggressive, in-your-face, offensive thinking team, which really wasn't the case under Lemaire. Lemaire always argued that he was never stifling his players from playing defense. He was concentrating on defense first, but in effect it came out to the same thing. And I think what's going to be interesting to see is that if Richards kind of pushes them in a different direction, which he expects to do, you're going to see a lot of the players. You're going to see a lot more from the players potentially, because I think there are a lot of players on this team that have the offensive potential that's kind of been kept in a box for a lot of years because they're afraid to go in a different direction. So I think that's going to change. And, reality is, had this been done maybe a couple of years earlier, they might still have Marian Gaborik.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was going to be my next question is, while we're talking about changes, one of the big changes in the division was not incoming but outgoing, with Gaborik going to New York. Potentially a premature move, considering what might happen for Minnesota, or is this just simply too small of a fish, or too big of a fish in that market with not being able to get the money he wanted, or other instances like that?
I don't think it was ever a question of money. I think Minnesota was ready to pay him whatever he wanted, and I think they made several attempts. I think Gaborik basically had it in his mind that, last year was his first opportunity. This past summer was his first opportunity to become an unrestricted free agent. He waited his 7 years. He played his entire career with Minnesota, being their first overall pick, and he was a franchise player. So this was his opportunity to go someplace else, and he took it. So I don't know that that might have changed had this. I mean, as I said earlier, the style might have made an impact on him a couple of years ago. I think by the time they got to the last season, nothing they could have done would have kept him.
Right.
But
right.
Again, they signed Martin Havlat, who may not be quite the player that Gabrick is, but he is still a
sure.
high-end offensive player when he's healthy.
No question.
If the system changes and if the team plays more of an offensive type of game where their players can utilize their skills in a way they haven't before, Havlat could fit into that just the way he did in Chicago, where he was part of that offensive machine last year. And I think, you know, you won't necessarily see that big a drop-off from losing Gabrick.
And you know what's kind of ironic about the fact that they signed Havlat to replace Gabrick is that, like Gabrick, they still have to worry about his health. I know last
right.
year he was healthy, but it's still a question of,
sure.
you know. So it will be interesting to see how he even does this year, if he can stay healthy. And in some, not that I want to see him hurt, but it would also be interesting to see how the team under a new system functions without a player like that. If they
right.
start, you know, letting guys like Koivu and Miettinen get more involved offensively, you know, what can these guys do and how dangerous can they be?
Yeah, and I don't think they're going to, just because the system becomes more offense-oriented, that they're going to all of a sudden forget all that they learned
oh, no. yeah.
under Lemaire. So they, you know, should
yeah.
still be able to, you know, hold a team if they have a lead or
mm-hmm.
or whatever the case may be. So again, an interesting story to watch over the first couple months of the season.
But I guess the one other thing that I'm interested to follow is, what does this mean for Backstrom? For a guy who has played in front of a really
right.
stingy defense, you know, not to say he's a bad goaltender,
sure,
but,
sure.
you know, to what degree, you know, do the 2-1 games become 3-1? Or, you know, where does he stand with these with these teams? So that will be interesting to
so
see how he fares.
If the numbers drop, does that mean Marty Brodeur can no longer lay claim as a great goaltender and they can put back the system goalie wrap on him?
I think so. I mean, if that's the case, if you start seeing some numbers increase or, you know, they're letting in a few more goals, you know, it might be...
Yeah, I don't think that's... I think he's going to see more shots probably, but I
yeah.
don't know that it's necessarily going to translate into a much higher, much different goals against average or save percentage for him. Remember, his defense is still basically the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
And this year they're going to have Brett Burns. Last year Lemaire tried Brett Burns at forward mm-hmm. for a while, and that was not really a good experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Burns is like the kind of defenseman who's along the lines of Mike Green in Washington. He has the offensive mm-hmm. potential in the back end. Kim Johnson's a good defenseman. Schultz
sure.
is still there. They signed Greg Zanon this summer, who's basically a shot-blocking machine.
Yeah.
So I don't think the defense is going to be, you know, any weaker in that sense. And quite honestly, I don't think Todd Richards would have gotten the chance to coach in the NHL if he was seen as irresponsible defensively, because no matter how much coaches look at, you know, playing offense or being aggressive, and you have to do that in today's game,
mm-hmm.
you have to be responsible defensively. And I think
no,
any coach,
question.
Unless you're Mike Keenan, remembers that.
Yeah.
All right, so
sorry, Mike.
Yeah, let's transition that Gabrick talk to other moves within the division. This time, let's take a look at personnel changes from the player's perspective. Any moves you liked or disliked with regards to the Northwest Division? That's a good one.
Offhand, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about some of them. The one that I'm not really sold on is Hobby Bullen in Edmonton.
Okay.
I do think he
because
is
he's not in the last year of his contract.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think is he an upgrade over Rollison? Definitely. But at the same time, I'm starting to wonder if we'll see a rehash of what happened when he signed in Chicago a couple of years back. You know, he didn't really earn his paychecks out
there.
Does
he have anyone there to push him either? Like
he doesn't.
Chicago, exactly.
He doesn't.
That's part of it. I think when he got to Chicago, though, the Blackhawks weren't ready. They weren't a very good team when he got there. So I think his play in part reflected the weakness of the team in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem in Edmonton. I don't think he has a great, great team. I think he has a lot of young players in front of him. They're still learning and still evolving. There is talent there. How good that talent is still up for debate, because they haven't, you know, a lot of these players look really good as rookies. They didn't take the kind of steps forward as sophomores you might expect. So you have a question mark in front of him, and I don't know how that's going to translate to his play. Again, this thing about the being in the last year of his contract is a motivating factor for the guy, because money's always been a real critical issue in his career.
Yeah.
He's held out. He's done a lot of different things. So that it I think, you know, he can be a good goaltender, and he can give them the kind of net money they need if his game is on, but that's always a question mark. I think, you know, in terms of moves, what I really was impressed with this summer was the Canucks, first of all, getting the key players back under contract. They got the Sedins signed day one. Yep. They got Luongo signed before training camp, so they got major, major components of that team that did really well last year back in the fold and for a long time. And signing Mikael Samuelsson, I think, was a real good move on their part. He's an underrated player. He didn't get a lot of money, but he got more money than he could have in Detroit, where basically the cap issues are too much for them to deal with.
Right.
Samuelsson is an underrated player. He's, you know, he can play on the top two lines in a pinch. He's a good third line player. He's got legs. He can score goals and he can check. So I think that was a real good addition at a good price for Vancouver. I like what they did.
Actually, I can be positive for once. Actually, with Vancouver,
why start now.
Actually, with Vancouver, one move I liked and I just remembered because it happened last week was the Ehrhoff trade. The fact that they got Christian Ehrhoff.
Yes.
I mean, here
and
you
have Schneider, right?
Yeah,
right.
And Brad Lukowich. But but from the offense standpoint, Ehrhoff was, I think, like a third line or a third pairing defenseman in San Jose. He kind of, you know, fell behind Dan Boyle's, Rob Blake's there. But he can be an, you know, offensive defenseman. He could be a good addition to that blue line. So, That was a move I found as a positive one for them, and it's pretty much one of the reasons that I think Vancouver is going to repeat. I don't know if you agree with me.
I think they're the best in the Northwest. I don't think that's much of a question at this point. I think Calgary is going to give them a run for part of the season. I don't think Calgary is going to be able to stay with them the entire season, but those are the only two real playoff teams I see coming out of this division right now.
Oh, well, let's stick with Calgary and get your thoughts on the Bouwmeester situation there.
Well, you know, he was one of the most coveted young defensemen out there. I mean, everybody wanted him at the trade deadline. People knew he was going to be a free agent, so there was a scramble. I think in the sense that Calgary was able to make a deal before he got to free agency to get his rights and then to sign him was a coup on their part. But they spent a lot of money to sign him. And you have to start wondering about the way this team is being managed from a business point of view, because last season they ran into a debacle late in the year when they had managed a cap so poorly, and because of injuries they couldn't dress more than 15 skaters in a critical game late in the season, which effectively cost them a chance at division title. So they went out and they didn't really relieve any cap pressure. They ended up adding to it in the sense they have a lot of money concentrated in their top seven or eight players, which means they don't have a lot concentrated in 9 to 20. And, you know, you're looking at trying to balance a team. You may be able to win top heavy. It doesn't seem to be the way. You still need to have, you know, some talent dispersed throughout the rest of the lineup. And I think that was part of the issue with Calgary last year. Mike Keenan, when he was coaching, he likes basically to deal with his star players, and he treats them in one way and he treats everybody else the rest in a different way. He didn't have that much to deal with beyond those top seven or eight players. And right. Brent Sutter coming in is basically the same situation. He has some very expensive high-end talent, but he does not have a great deal beyond that, and trying to find a mix may be difficult for the Flames.
I was kind of shocked at the fact the Flames did go after Bouwmeester, because last year when there was a lot of talk and, you know, it was trying to figure out the logic of, well, where would he go? Where would he fit in? And just taking Canadian teams into consideration, Calgary was the thing that stood out to me was that they have one of the better defenses in the league without him, just in terms of personnel. So it was kind of like, well, why would Calgary go after, you know, another stud defenseman? You talk about balance, you know, would that money have been better off spent for another forward versus a defenseman?
Right, and that's a fair question. I think the thing is, though, that last year, if you remember, Dion Phaneuf did not have a great year.
Yeah.
And there was some speculation that he might be offered one for one for Bouwmeester. So they're looking at trying.
I wish.
No, but that was part of the thought process, because, you know, it was Phaneuf, a couple of years ago, Phaneuf was considered the next, you know, potential Norris lock for a decade or something.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Last year, his star fell a lot. And again, maybe having Bouwmeester gives them the opportunity to move Phaneuf at some point during the year.
Or maybe take the pressure off him and let him get back to his game.
Could be. But again, you're talking about.
Then what is that game?
You're just talking about, you know, you have $12 million in those two defensemen. You have Robin Regier is basically the same. So you have like $17, $18 million just in three defensemen. Mm-hmm. Then you throw a Ginland in there at $7 or $8 million and Kiprusoff at that kind of money. You have $30 million in five players and your cap, you know, you have very little to spread through the rest of the lineup. And there's Jokinen, who's also a $5 million
salary. Think they're the Rangers?
Well, they could be. But that's an issue, I think.
But the question I have, you know, with Phaneuf and Bouwmeester, you know, what aspect of his game, you know, comes forth? You would assume with bringing in a guy like Bouwmeester, they, you know, they could essentially pair the two and say to Phaneuf, you stay at home, you know, check people, because Bouwmeester doesn't check people, be the hard-handing defenseman, but then that's going to drop his numbers. So, you know, what aspect do they want out of him? And
right, you know, I would guess that it's just a matter of, regardless of what role it is, and even if it's some sort of shared responsibility, offense, defense, mm-hmm. just that he gets his confidence back and that he's playing good hockey. It doesn't matter in what element or what facet it is. I mean, obviously they'll need him to do one thing or another at some point in time, and maybe they offset it by, you know, giving him some power play time or increasing power play time. But just a matter of getting the confidence back, getting him playing better hockey, the hockey that he'd played earlier in his NHL career, his short NHL career.
You're talking about Phaneuf?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think part of the trick for Brent Sutter is going to be getting the right amount of ice time for all these guys. Because
the trick's more on Sutter than it is on the player.
Right, because, I mean, all these guys are basically 22 to 24 minute a game defensemen, so you're going to have to find a way to balance that. And you know, that's going to be a trick. And I think, you know, quite honestly, for Bouwmeester coming over there, this is a critical year, because you remember when Bouwmeester was drafted, he was the next it guy. He was like, he was kind of looked at.
He was Dion Phaneuf before Dion Phaneuf.
Right, but he was also also one of those players.
The stronger.
But he was also one of those, like, you know, can't miss players that Crosby has been lately, Tavares, these kind of guys. Mm-hmm. A few years later, Bouwmeester was also like playing for the national junior team at 16. He was going to be the next great player.
Sure.
He kind of got lost in Florida for 7 years of his career because of the team and because of the market. Everybody looked at him as a quality defenseman. He was on an Olympic team a couple of years ago, but he really hasn't showed himself to be the kind of player that you would expect to be like a franchise mm-hmm. player.
Sure.
Good quality player, and a lot of people blame that on where he was and the team that surrounded him and said maybe that brought him down. Now he's going into a market that he wants to be in, a hockey market, mm-hmm. which was always critical to him, with a team that has contending potential.
Right.
He has to step it up this year a great deal. It's going to be a lot of pressure on him, I think.
Kind of like Olli Jokinen having to step it up for the playoffs, right? At least one thing will come out of Calgary. Florida will find out if it's, you know, if the guys were really just not for them, or if do you know what I mean? These guys that they got rid of, and oh, they can't succeed here, so let's get rid of them. Well, now
Hyselius.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, well, let's stay with the team-by-team analysis here, and let's shift over to Colorado, the Joe Sakic-less Colorado Avalanche. What do we have to look forward to this season from Colorado?
Snowstorms.
Craig Anderson perhaps. Might have some interesting stretches.
Right.
I mean, he did in the past.
We can just say that he earned – his trip to Colorado.
Absolutely.
He played very, very well for the Panthers last year. And
as a backup for the past 2 years.
He almost bumped his way to starter.
Right, and I think he proved capable.
Salary issues.
I think he proved capable of being a number one goalie in the NHL last year. I think, obviously, you know, he's a little older. He's been kind of a journeyman who didn't really get his chance until late in hockey life,
right,
basically. But the opportunity it came around for him last year, he seized it. And quite honestly, I think he would have remained in Florida had it not been a question of the salary they're locked mm-hmm. into of Vokoun. I thought he outplayed Vokoun. I think he's going to get some consideration, believe it or not, between now and December. If he plays the way he's capable of playing, the way he did last year,
right,
I think the Team USA officials are going to look at him, you know, as perhaps the third-string goalie on the Olympic team going to Vancouver. He wasn't in their camp in Colorado, but I think, you know, they were looking at Jonathan Quick. Excuse me, in Chicago. But they were looking at Jonathan Quick from Los Angeles, who's a young goaltender.
Right.
But I think Anderson is going to get a look if he plays the way he's capable of playing. Mm-hmm. But overall, you're looking at a team that's going to go through a painful rebuilding problem. It started last year. Joe Sakic is gone. He was really gone last year. Mm-hmm. So I think this year at least you're going to see the first definition of the Paul Stastny era. I think he's going to start putting his imprint on the team a little more. I think you're going to see Matt Duchene have more of a chance to mature faster in this role than he might have otherwise coming in. But I think, you know, you have to wonder what's going on in that organization. This was always seen as a very good, first-class, well-run organization. And the things that happened there this summer, the way they fired their coach and general manager, let him hang out to dry, was sloppy, to say the least.
Right,
and, you know,
with the
whole Patrick Waugh. So I think there's going to be some questions moving forward, where they're going to go, how much money they want to spend in the next little year, how ready they're going to be to, you know, to suffer the rebuilding process. And I think it's going to be a long one.
Yeah, the thing that stands out for me as far as Colorado goes is, you know, talking about them being a top organization and, you know, not as sloppy as previously. Their farm system in the past had always been very, very strong. And I think that goes back to their Quebec Nordiques days when they were really not so great. And it will be very interesting to see how in this rebuilding phase, how they even rebuild their farm system. Because I don't think they have the talent that they used to churn out. I mean, even at deadline time, some of the picks that they would, or the prospects they would, you know, trade to get a veteran player in to try for the cup, they don't have those guys anymore. Obviously, Duchene is the start of it all again. Stastny was a, you know, another farmhand.
Yeah.
But yeah, but the depth of it is not, you know, some of these guys coming in now, it's kind of questionable. So it'll be painful, but at the same time, for some of those star play or the star rookies, I should say, like the Duchene, they can be patient with him. They can take their time. If he screws up, it's not like they expect to be making a run for the cup this year.
Right.
It's all part of the learning process. And he's 18, and he's going to be able to do it at the NHL level. So that's only going to benefit them later on.
Yeah, the real problem is, though, I think people in Colorado are pretty impatient because, if you remember, from the time they arrived from Quebec in 96 and won that first Stanley Cup in their first year there, They went through a stretch of like a dozen years where they sold out every single game. That hasn't happened the last couple. Their attendance numbers have dropped. The interest level has dropped to some extent there. And I think that's a difficult situation because I don't know if Colorado's farm system was really as impressive as it seemed. I think when Pierre Lacroix was running it, he used to hoodwink a lot of teams at the deadline. And he made a lot of good deals because they had oodles and oodles of money to spend. And they were really a team that never hesitated to spend money at the last minute, whether it was a Ray Bourque, or whether it was a Theo Fleury, or whether it was a Rob Blake. Sure. Whoever they needed, they would get the players. Here's a first-round pick. Here's a low-end player. They never really concentrated on building the organization from the ground up because they could just spend money. And they brought – when they came over, I mean – The base of that team was you had a Sakic and a Forsberg and a Patrick Waugh and you had Adam Foote and you had all these players, you know, Chris Drury. You had a lot of talent, veteran talent, that you could always just add those pieces without worrying about going through like the painful process of growing it. So I think they have a lot of work to do on several levels in that organization.
Yeah.
I think much like Minnesota, this is going to be another one that's going to, you know, bear following through as the season goes on, just to see
how low can they go.
Well, you know, I mean, are they there's being in last place, and I realize that wherever you are, it doesn't matter how you got there because that's where you are. But you know, are they playing good hockey and just falling short, or are they just a miserable, hapless bunch of players? You know, and we've seen both instances in the NHL, right, of a team that's struggling. So that's what I'm curious with Colorado is, are they going to play like a good brand of hockey, but, you know, they're just maybe, you know, an experience short or talent short of their opponents on some nights?
That may well be. Although I have to say one thing about the new regime there. The one move that really impressed me this summer from that organization was getting rid of Ryan Smith. Not because he's not a good player, and he showed at Canada's training camp he still has something left. But the fact is, they don't need a player of his abilities at this point in their rebuilding process. He's a veteran player. He's a piece that you need in a different environment. In Los Angeles, I think he'll fit well because he's a veteran. It's a young team that actually has taken some steps forward, and he can be a missing piece. But the fact is, they cleared $5 million off their salary cap by getting rid of him. Kyle Quincy, who looked pretty good in Detroit a couple of years ago, and Tom Precing on defense can move the puck. So they saved a lot of money, and I think that was a smart move on their part. So that they get kudos for.
Even the mentality of getting moving a guy like him to say, you know, we're not going to prolong the inevitable and just rebuild. So it's, yeah, to get rid of him was a smart move.
All right, let's take our last team. We kind of touched on them earlier, but we're going to swing back to Edmonton like so many NHL players who are free agents want to do.
Yes.
And take a look at – we talked a little bit about their goalie situation, but let's take a look at their skaters and –
and their coaches. They have two coaches.
And their coaches as we move into this season.
Yes, they're two coaches. Pat Quinn is the head coach, and Tom Rennie is an associate coach.
An associate coach,
yes. So that's going to be interesting.
As a Ranger fan and having spent lots of time with Tom Rennie via the television over the last few years, I have to say I'm very happy for the guy. Always seemed like a very stand-up guy, a very very intelligent hockey man. Obviously, it just as is the case sometimes, the message gets lost over time, and it works with certain players, doesn't work with others. So I'm very happy for him. I hope he's successful. I'd like to think that Edmonton is in a better place right now because he's there.
Are the Rangers?
I think so.
That's what you're really happy about.
I think they are because, like I said, the message just was getting too old on the players that had been there for that stretch, and for the new players, perhaps it just wasn't the right group of people to each coach, and I think that's the situation all over in all of sport. That sometimes it takes the right players to go with the right coach to find success, and the group, it wasn't what they needed. You know, they needed someone perhaps with the fire that Tortorella brings, and I think that that group of players in New York, which we can discuss when we get to the Atlantic Division, will be better off with that type of coach. And I think Edmonton with the intellect that Rennie can bring and his smart
systems,
X's and O's kind of guy, that it works out for. I think it'll work out for him.
I think that's really the key, because Pat Quinn basically got drummed out of hockey a couple of years ago, and he left. He's an older guy. He's in his 60s, I guess, and he left with a reputation that he can't deal with the new age hockey player that really is becoming standard in the NHL today. And I think he went and he kind of rehabilitated his image with his work.
The junior.
Yeah, I think in the Spengler Cup he coached a young team, and then with the World Junior team they won a gold medal. So he kind of showed that he can still maybe use an iPod or something. You know, I guess he understands the modern world.
See, I'm not out of touch.
No, but the thing is,
and then you play the iPod.
Quinn was always, his game is playing offense and playing, he used to be using veteran guys, but play offense. And his strength was more of a motivator. And that was really what people want from him. And that will help to the extent that with young players, they may need the right kind of rah-rah guy. And whatever Quinn brings to the table in that regard. With Rennie, who, maybe the next head coach, and maybe this is a transitional thing, because, again, Pat Quinn is not going to be around for 10 years. And Rennie is still
as a coach,
right? Excuse me, right? Obviously, as a coach, but Rennie is younger, and Rennie is the X's and O's systems guy.
Sure,
that was that was part of the Rangers game that was very impressive, because their penalty killing was great, their defense was very strong. They couldn't score goals because their system was too tied to playing defense and not making mistakes.
Right.
I think there's a balance going to be struck because of Quinn's philosophy, but I think having a guy like Rennie who can run the kind of practices that are necessary for a young team and teach, I think it's going to be a good balance in Edmonton.
Agreed.
And it will be interesting too with Rennie being there, and you mentioned the Rangers defense not having the pieces necessarily. Now he's got some pretty good horses on the blue line for the power play.
Right.
So it will be interesting to see how that works out. And yes, I agree that Quinn is a good addition, and it might just be what some of the guys like Gagne and Cogliano and the younger players who kind of had the fall off during the sophomore years, they need those guys to produce. I mean, where the offense is going to come from otherwise, it's you don't want your offense coming from the blue line like it did last year.
No.
So they need a little bit more up front, and you know, I would hope that those guys can, you know, have a breakout year and build upon some strong rookie efforts.
It's important. It's very important because really what it comes down to, I mean, Edmonton 2 years ago, these guys had really good rookie years and everybody thought they're going to take the next step.
Right,
they didn't last year.
Yeah.
So the question is now, was the first year indicative of what they can do and last year was kind of an aberration, or was the first year an aberration and last year more indicative?
Yeah,
and this is, you know, this is what they have to see, because if, you know, if last year was more telling about what these players really are and, you know, where they are level wise in terms of potential in the NHL, Edmonton's got a longer way to go than people realize.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for the Northwest Division. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. And stay tuned. Next week we'll be doing which division, guys?
Atlantic.
Well, there you go. Perfect segue. We'll tackle the Atlantic Division next week. Make sure you listen to us and catch all of our preview information on cbssports.com/NHL.